Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Should I sing to intro the episode? What if this episode was just done in song?
I would have warmed up. No.
I would make people go deaf.
All right. No music.
More torture.
No music. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Onceable, episode 113, where we'll be talking about Once Upon a Time, season 6, episode 20, The Song in Your Heart. It is the musical wedding extravaganza. So if you have any thoughts on this episode or season 6 as a whole, you can reach us on Twitter at Onceable or comment on this post on Hypeable.com. Tonight, I am joined by Kristen and Caitlin. Hello, ladies. How are we feeling?
Hello.
All right.
Don't worry. No one on this podcast is going to burst into song at any time.
Dear God, no.
We are all the dark one when it comes to this episode. We are not singing.
Or Henry.
Yeah.
Pick one line. That's all you
Henry
get.
Henry is not amused by this music. So let's start with thumbs up, thumbs down. And then I also kind of want to throw in what your favorite song was in addition to your overall judgment of this episode. So let's kick it off with Kristen.
Okay. Well, my overall thumbs up, thumbs down is definitely a thumbs up. This was like magical in all the ways. Like it's corny and cheesy, but it was really sweet and fun. So definitely a thumbs up. And favorite number, I mean, it's gotta be Hook's song. Colin O'Donohue's voice, oh my God. Like the quality of his voice was really, really pretty. So while his song wasn't the best song, it was my favorite.
Awesome. And Caitlin, what about you?
I'm going to go thumbs sideways because I found myself cringing through a lot of it. And the only part with rewatchable value for me is the wedding at the very end. Favorite number was definitely Hook's as well. It was the first one I actually got into and was just cracking up at just revenge. Like it was, I found it hilarious and it felt like the most meta of anything. So definitely Hook's.
I'm going to give it a thumbs up. I too did have trouble getting into it and suffered a lot of secondhand embarrassment watching this by myself. But once you got to like the third or fourth number, it sort of like fell into a rhythm where I kind of almost forgot that this show doesn't regularly burst into song. And I have to say my favorite number was the Evil Queen's because I just thought she was having so much fun doing it. I don't know if it was actually fun while filming that, but it was very amusing to me. I loved it so much. I thought she was like, even though like when she like barges into Geppetto's shop, she's a little too sexual. I'm like,
I loved how he kind of like
5-year-old there.
Yeah, I love how he kind of like shelters Pinocchio. He's like shoves him under the table, like go, yeah, just go down there.
It was so good. I loved it. I loved every single moment of that song. I thought she was just on fire. So great. So let's pull up some of our favorite quotes from the episode before we break down some more of what actually went on in this episode. And let's kick it off with you, Caitlin.
So mine was part of Killian's vows because it was really adorable. And right before he puts the ring on Emma's finger, he says, "They say that a captain's heart belongs to a ship, but with this ring, it now belongs to you." And I melted.
Swoon.
It was so great. And Kristen, I loved yours as well.
Mine is not necessarily funny, but it's hilarious. It's Grumpy/Leroy's line at the end when he yells, "The Blackfairy's curse! It's here!" Because I just love him and his town crierness, and the fact that he got one more curse yell in before the, possibly his role ends, because who knows where this show's going next year. I just thought it was really lovely, and I do have a special spot in my heart for Leroy, so love it.
He could star in the Captain Obvious commercial.
Yeah. Oh my god, he's so good. That would be great.
Yes, he could. So mine happened during Hook's song, actually, and it's when Snow is asking a question and comes up and gets really close to her and he's like, just wait for the second verse.
That was brilliant. That was really funny.
And then I also loved when like Rumple was gearing up to, like, you know, he does his little twirl and Regina's like, why aren't you singing? And he's getting ready and then he's like, sorry, dearie, do you think the Dark One sings? And I just thought that was so fitting and perfect and funny. And, you know, made me not hate him for a hot second.
So. It's like when he's Rumpelstiltskin, the Dark One in the Enchanted Forest, he's really funny and charming. It's when he's a normal person, we all want to punch him in the face.
Yeah, so let's actually kick it off with Rumple, because that scene where Regina goes down to see him locked up when Snow and Charming are bursting back into their room at the start of the episode, when we first get to the Enchanted Forest before Snow makes the wish that ultimately brings music to the Enchanted Forest. So Eddie and Adam kept saying, like, oh, we're going to revisit some themes from the pilot, and, you know, it's going to, like, kind of complete Emma's story a bit. Well, it did in a way, and I went back and rewatched the pilot. That scene where they come back into the room is literally seconds after events of the pilot, when they go down and Snow gives away Emma's name to Rumple, and Rumple says, like, you know, oh, well, in 28 years or 27 years, she's going to come back and the final battle will begin. And so that was just told to Snow seconds before she comes back into the room in the beginning of this episode and makes that wish. So I thought that that was really cool, having just watched the pilot. And we were talking a little bit before how unbelievable these actors are and the way that they age, because they look exactly the same. I watched the pilot maybe a week ago, and it's 6 years have passed in between these two episodes, and they age very well. These people look very good. And then just to have the whole story of Emma, you know, being the person who's bringing on this final battle and then seeing the final battle actually forming, it was just a really cool parallel to have. And I'm kind of glad that Eddie and Adam hinted that, you know, a lot is going to be drawing on the pilot. And it did, in more ways than one. And I was expecting just to get a bunch of Emma's story, and we see another flash to her in her foster home where she, you know, is recording herself singing, and she kept that tape for a very long time. I didn't record over it. I was like, well, if I had a recorder, I would probably record it over my own humming after, you know, not using it. But whatever, this is Once Upon a Time. And I was just curious what you guys think of this whole Emma finally, after we've been telling her off, you know, in our own little Once Upon a Time bubble for years, to sort of, like, stop trying to do things alone and just accept that you have help. I feel like we've been telling a lot of characters this, but do you guys feel like it's finally clicked that she's not alone? Like, they really beat you over the head with it in this episode, to the point where, like, there's literally a spell telling her that there are people in her heart.
Yeah, like, I really liked how they tied the music into this. Like, it could have, I mean, it's all fairy tale land-ish, so it works. Like, it could be really dumb, but it actually, for me, like, really worked and was really cute. And there is, like, you know, music does have a little bit of a magical quality for people, and to kind of work that into why they're always with her, and, like, you know, a tune in your head, like, it sticks with you. So it totally worked for me, and I am by, you know, all means, glad that Emma finally understands that just because they're not, like, standing next to you doesn't mean they're not with you, and your family is with you, and you're not alone, and you're not an orphan. You never really were. You know, you may have been in the human world for a time, but that's, you know, it was kind of unavoidable. And yeah, so it is lovely to finally get there to where Emma, you're not alone. You never really were, and you never will be. So just accept it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Does she accept it? Based on that preview, which I know we've said are very misleading, but sure doesn't look like it. I don't trust it because I feel like we've probably had this beaten over our heads as well as Emma multiple times at this point, and it has yet to stick, and I'm not going to believe it till I see it.
And that's a great point, because how many times have the people of the town fallen for the fact that Rumpel says that he did something and then he didn't do it?
Like, duh. They
don't really learn anything. I'm surprised he wasn't invited to the wedding, because they would have been like, you know, but he, you know, I don't know. He's kind of cool. Also, I don't think Belle was invited to the wedding, which is kind of rude, first of all. I didn't see her there.
Unless Gold has them stashed away somewhere so they couldn't come.
That's possible.
Because remember, I think it was the end of last episode, Gabriel and Belle were both asleep so that they couldn't be a pawn or something.
Oh, yeah, he did put Gideon and her to sleep, I think.
Yeah, which is still sad that nobody's like, hey, where's Belle?
Yeah, no one noticed.
Like, nobody asked, nobody said anything. Just Belle not being there is not a surprise.
Oh,
so we even got a baby Neil sighting.
Did you see his little tux?
I know.
That was so cute.
I was like, okay, baby Neil made it to the wedding. All right. Things are looking up for him.
Yeah. But in terms of Emma, I think it was important, and this will kind of segue into actually what you just wrote, Kristen, which is the fact that it was Henry who brought this to her attention. And, you know, we have Henry bringing her the storybook in the pilot and convincing her that, like, this is your family. You have all of these people here for you, and you need to come with me to fully experience the life that you're destined to lead. And he brings her, again, in this episode, the page that, you know, random pages just appear at the most convenient times. He brings her this page that he's never seen before, and he's getting angry and frustrated with the book, but it is ultimately that book that leads her to then again remember, oh, right, I was brought here for this reason, and these are the people who support me and love me. And, you know, then we have that weird moment where she's like trying to crush her heart, but nothing happens. It's like, it just reminded me exactly of the moment in Hercules where they're trying to cut his like thread of life and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what are you, a god now? Or what? But yeah, so let's talk about Henry a little bit, because I feel like besides just understandably not wanting to participate in the musical, because you could tell by his one single line that he had to sing, he was just not into it. He kind of doesn't have any agency as an author. And Kristen, what do you think about his role in this episode and maybe what his future is?
Well, I can't help but wonder, like, they keep bringing it up. We haven't had any Henry author stuff for a while. Like, it was like they forgot that he was the author and, you know, they weren't really incorporating that into the story. And then all of a sudden, it's been like, Henry is the author. Henry is the author. Henry has no say in this final battle. Henry cannot change it. Henry has tried. Now he's just pissed off that he can't change it. And then this page falls out and he's able to give her some sort of comfort and some sort of help. And so I have this feeling that somehow, some way, author Henry is going to come into play in this finale. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I feel like they've been setting us up for this, for him to have a role in the final battle. Whether it's that he comes up with a way to give Emma something that will save the day, like, it looks like we're going back to the Enchanted Forest maybe at some point, because we saw Regina in her evil queen garb back there talking about the final battle. So I'm like, is Henry going to make it to the Enchanted Forest? You know, like, how is that going to change his role as the author? Like, could that affect it? So there's just a lot of, you know, question marks hanging out in the air right now. And I really think that he's going to end up playing a role here.
I sure hope so. I mean, like you said, they are laying all these breadcrumbs and yet still not really giving him anything. So it's hard to even feel like Henry's a huge part of anything. And when he does come out and play even just a small role, it's usually like the, no, mom, you can do it. And we had him like get, we are seeing him get frustrated. And I don't know if that's like Jared getting frustrated because he doesn't have more to do, or it's like just the fact that he can't give just an encouraging speech anymore. Like, he needs to have some sort of agency when everything else is taken away from him. And maybe that's coming in the mysterious season 7, if we do get it. You know, we haven't gotten any confirmation, but maybe Henry will play a bigger role and he can write his own story or just explore what the author means. I mean, I think they were onto something with this whole Land of Untold Stories business and
just letting him like help complete people's stories was really cool.
Yeah. Or just start the next chapter, you know, like, why does it have to end? Why, what happens when the final battle's over? You know, well, like, what is the next chapter?
And I think it would be kind of cool if, like, as the next chapter of this story, like, let's say, you know, Emma wins final battle, her and Hook, like, walk off into the sunset, and most of the Charmings are not necessary to be on screen at all times, but somehow Henry gets separated and has to use his abilities as the author to write people's stories to get himself back home. Like, you know, like, there's a way to keep them in the story, but without making the story about Emma and Snow and, you know, and Charming and all that. Like, I think that would be a cool way to kind of keep it, keep them involved without it being like they must be on camera every week. Something like that.
What do you think about this, Caitlin?
I just keep wondering how much agency an author can truly have, considering everyone seems to know a whole lot about how this final battle is going to go down, and they've been talking about it for ages, and that there's going to be a savior, and they have to face this great evil by themselves. Like, it seems like there's a whole lot of destiny playing out, in which case the author is really just expressing what is meant to be. So unless they are, like, I could see them playing with the idea of like breaking destiny, in which case Henry could have agency, but we've already seen him trying to change it and failing. So I wonder if it's even possible for the author, at least of this part of the story, to even have agency, which is kind of frustrating.
Yeah, and we saw when, at least when Isaac was around, that whole idea of your job is just to document, and then, you know, you get in trouble when you try to write something outside of what is supposed to happen. But I'm like wondering, we keep, like, the storybook is almost full, and like, what happens when those stories are done? So I'd be interested to see if they, the creators that know what happens when the storybook is done, or if, is there some sort of role that, you know, or mentor that Henry can go and off in search of after the storybook gets filled? Like, I'm curious what happens, what type of reset could accommodate for keeping people around, but also completing their stories. And I know that it's been said a few times that a bunch of these stories are going to be completed. So curious whose story that means and who doesn't. I guess we'll have to pay attention to contract negotiations to get a better idea.
For sure, yeah.
The episode ends, we'll talk a little bit about the music at the end of this episode, but let's just jump all the way ahead to the end of this. So when the Black Fairy fails to crush Emma's heart, there's still this looming 6 o'clock deadline on the horizon. And what she does is she sets off, bum, 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 another curse. So, Caitlin, what do we think is going on here?
On the one hand, like, it makes sense because this whole thing started with a curse. So, of course, it's going to end with a curse to be, you know, to bookend it properly. But at the same time, this feels like the 37th curse we've had at this point. They're starting to not be interesting. So when it was like, oh, there's another curse coming, I would just kind of said, oh, like,
I don't think you were the only one.
It just feels like another, at this point, delaying tactic to, like, we got two more episodes to go, guys. We gotta fill up a little more time before we really get, because we know how long the final battle is going to take, so we're going to throw this curse in there to pad time a little bit, is kind of how it feels.
Yeah, and I feel like they do this, like, you exactly what you were saying, every season. We have either, I think this is just, like, flipping the book, because I think they want to wrap up at the end instead of set up. So we always have these two-part finales where it's, like, part one, alternate universe time travel episode. Part two, we're going to set up an entirely new season. Like, you know, like, it's right now what they're doing is they're, like, playing the setup episode first, and then we're going to have to come back for the final battle unless this alternate, wherever they're going, you know, has the street. Because I feel like we're still going to have that battle that we've been seeing in Emma's vision. I think we have to get back to that. So it is. It feels like a delay. Like, oh, we have to deliver a 2-hour finale. What are we going to do with the first hour? Should have just done the musical in the first hour. It was like an alternate reality.
Yeah, and they definitely, like, not time traveled, but they kind of did with the flashbacks. Like, it would have worked.
Yeah, and I was glad that they kept it. It felt very natural for the music to be taking place in the flashbacks as opposed to the present day. So it felt, when Emma started singing, it felt very out of place after I, like, just got used to the, you know, when you cut back to a flashback, you're going to get a song, and it made sense. There was a curse, like a spell, and yada, yada, yada. But when they cut up and Emma's singing in the mayor's office, I was like, whoa,
yes!
Make it end.
I was like, this is not a singing moment.
Neither is right after you say your vows.
I could handle the speak singing in the office. Like, it was kind of weird at first, but once she got going, it worked. I was like, all right, I can handle this. But the song after they said their vows was kind of,
The beginning of that was horrible. When they were all actually singing, like, at the end, it felt very, that was the part that I think felt the most musically. Like, the rest of it was cute and fun and nice little diversions, but that, like, big company number felt very, very fairy tale-esque. Like, it felt very, like, this is the show you're watching on the Disney stage before the fireworks happen every night in the park, and everyone's happy, and who knew Storybrooke had such great dancers? They really pulled out all the stops for this wedding. And yeah, I was so angry that I told Kristen this already, but the fact that Regina kept dancing awkwardly with Zelina, I was like, Henry could dance with her. Like, she doesn't have to awkwardly dance with her sister to make her feel like a part of this family. Please stop trying to make Zelina feel like a part of this family, because it looks so horrible.
See, I had this weird moment during this episode where it just hit me that, what if Zelina is Regina's happy ending? It sort of feels like they're going, like, she's going to have true family after all this time.
That's interesting and definitely possible. I feel like that would be really sad for Regina. Well, mainly because, yeah, I just want her to have more. Whether or not that's, like, a happy ending with someone, or I guess Zelina being a part of that happy ending is fine, but I hope she's not, like, the be-all, end-all of the happy ending.
Before we started, we also kind of talked about all the little, like, how the in that final musical number, the camera kept finding really random people like Geppetto and the dwarves, like they kept going back to him. And now that we're talking about this, I kind of wonder if it's not like their final curtain call.
Well, that's interesting. So like the dwarves and Geppetto and
like maybe they won't all be making it to next season. And so rather than trying to stick them all in the finale and try and like find a way to get them on camera, they gave them this like, you know, they gave them each their moments in that final song to kind of let us see that they're all there and we remember them. And now they're probably not going to be around anymore. It just makes me wonder.
Yeah, I think that's a great point and probably smart on their part if they did think that far ahead to, you know, really focus on them. I liked that they kept showing the dwarves together because I feel like we don't get a lot of moments of them like hanging out together. And I liked in the mirrors when Regina has all those mirrors around her, she kept seeing like glimpses into different people's lives. And like Granny was singing in like her rocking chair. And you, then you have, you know, the dwarves going to work and they're singing their little tune. And then Geppetto's in his shop. I just thought all those moments were cute. And Sydney Glad, like, just, all right, Sydney's there singing away.
Yep.
The musical numbers, you both liked Hook's number the best. What did you like about it the most? I really enjoyed the choreography, I think. And I think his song had a lot of humor in it, which is very, very Hook-esque.
Yeah, I found it hilarious, which was helpful because I was cringing through so much of it. So, like, the whole very obvious self-awareness of how ridiculous it is made it easier to enjoy and get in the spirit of than some of the others were like, we're so serious about the power of love. And then this one's like, revenge. I'm like, okay, I can go with this one.
Yeah, I really like that song because I liked Colin's voice. Like, let's face it, all of them sang very well, which is like my major issue is when you get a musical episode and they give songs to people who can't sing. That makes me crazy. They all did a pretty good job. The weakest link for me was definitely Jennifer Morrison, but even then, like, I've seen musical episodes where things just go horribly wrong, and she, you know, she held her own pretty well, but Colin's voice just stood out to me, which is why I liked his song so much. Like, it, you know, the choreography was fine, whatever. It was him. He's a pirate. He's not going to go, you know, leaping off of things and, you know, spinning around all the time. Like, I really just liked his voice. Other than his song, though, I really did like Snow and Charming's that started the episode. It was sweet and, you know, sickeningly sweet, but that's them. Like, it worked because it was them.
Yeah, I thought that their song, because of course it's the first song, so it's going to be the most jarring. Mm-hmm. And I like that they started it basically being like, I don't know why we're singing. Like, we're going to, we're going to figure that out. I don't know why we're singing, but we'll get there. And then you have Charming swinging in the room. And I was like, oh no.
What the hell? He was like, my favorite was when he was like, and I sound pretty good.
Man, he walks in the room with this belt. Like, it's like, just, they didn't shy away from it at all. And I'm like, holy hell, these people can sing. Like, this isn't even fair.
Yeah. It was so good. Like, just watching him in that role and like, both of them being shocked. And then, like, when they go against Regina and they're just so, like, ready to sing. Then when she takes their voices, like, Little Mermaid style, and they try to, like, they're just saying the words. I thought that was really funny.
It was really cute, yeah. And Regina's song, like, I loved that it was more like punk rock than musical, typical like Broadway musical kind of song. Like, she, and her hair was insane, and I loved it.
And she just had like such great moves. Like,
Oh, see, that's what I hated about that song.
Oh, it was so like, Rocky horror awesomeness.
It felt to me like I was watching somebody dancing when they think no one's looking. And I would really hate for someone to look at me when I'm rocking out when I don't think anyone's looking. So I was like embarrassed for her.
Oh, I loved it. I thought she just killed it with what she had to do. I thought it was so good.
Her boobs looked really nice, though. Yes.
They were very distracting, I will say. I kept going like, damn, girl.
I'm like, she's going to fall out of one of these outfits one day. It was crazy. Yeah. But I did really enjoy just watching her. And then the whole Emma's theme. I think my biggest thing with that wasn't so much how awkward it was with her singing or how I just really felt bad for Jennifer Morrison having to do that. But the fact that they had to try and make that work into the story. Like, okay, Blue comes and is like, by the way, you're not going to remember any of this, but it's totally going to come in handy 6 years down the line. Like, we're just setting this up right now. And that was the biggest thing that bugged me, where I was talking to my friend about it and I was like, just watch the musical episode, but when you get to this one part, I want you to text me about it, because I know she's like kind of on the same page as I am with like the convenience factor, and I think all of us are. When she got to that part, she's like, seriously? Why are they doing this? If they wanted to make a musical episode work, they could have made it work without having to have it play into the final battle. And I have to agree. I think it was that whole way that it tied in as just one more way to divert the Black Fairy and still not get out of the final battle was just, that rubbed me the wrong way entirely, because it's so easy for Emma to walk away from this Black Fairy. And I think we've talked about this the past couple of episodes. The first time she confronts her, she literally just turns around and walks out after like seeing her wax family standing there, not moving. And then she just walks right back in. Like, no one's stopping her. There's no sense of urgency stopping her. They just let her leave. And then she comes back, and of course, this, like, some magic played into their second encounter, but it never ends with this. I feel like it's being dragged out forever, and the musical wasn't really needed.
I think if they wanted to use, like, the song in her heart and let that be a way for her to feel connected, I feel like maybe they should have made this the first part of the freaking finale and let them stay mannequins, cut the final curse, and just have her facing the Black Fairy on her own and then discover that, like, she doesn't feel alone. Like, I think that would have had a stronger effect than her literally standing there and singing her family awake. I know that they wanted to get her a musical number, clearly. And so, like, they wanted, you know, Emma to have a song, and this was how they made it work. But I do feel like it would have been a stronger idea to tie this in, and rather than having her walk away from the Black Fairy all on her own again, like, there were better options.
Yeah, I agree.
I would have liked it if it was just like the entire musical was tied to the wedding. This is your main character getting married after 6 years. Like, that's okay if you want to spend the whole episode with that. And they could have like just hit the curse at the end and been like, surprise! That might have even been more powerful, because it's like, where did that come from?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I loved, the thing I did like about the introduction of this curse was the fact that I thought it went beautifully with the music. Like, it kind of like is right as you're like, if you're watching a musical on stage, like that would have been the curtain drop for intermission. And like Kristen was saying, it would have played well to have been either the first half of the finale or the standalone episode that we do get to celebrate all of these characters. And it is more threatening, as opposed to like, oh, we didn't know that she was making a curse, or, oh, we didn't know she had a backup plan. Like, just introduce that on the side, because anything that happened with Rumpel on the side of this episode didn't matter anyway. It just showed how much of a horrible person he is still. So it didn't help his character, it didn't hurt his character, and we didn't need these little side adventures of like Hook going to find him and then everyone just being a nervous wreck the whole time, it just took away from, there's too much going on, and I think we could have done more with the wedding, like you were pointing out, Caitlin.
I did enjoy Hook getting this brief moment of one-upsmanship on Rumple, though.
Yes. Yeah, he marched in there and knew what he was doing. We didn't talk about the only person who, like, has a legitimate, like, past singing who got a musical number, probably because we don't like her. But Zelina did have her own number in this episode. And
so pointless.
It was literally just a whole musical number of being like, look at me! I am being chosen and summoned by Rumple, even though I don't get to cast the curse. He's gonna regret it because I'm the best. And I was like,
and I'm gonna make this box that Regina's gonna use.
Yeah,
and I was like, I don't care if I'm there. Like, wait, what?
I get the parallel, I really do, between like trying to show, because they did this with a couple of the numbers. Charming's always having hope and being fine, and then they show that in the present. And then you have Hook being so focused on revenge, and then you have him in the present being, like, you know, so focused on keeping the ones he loves close and how his mindset has changed. But he really hasn't, because then you get to the line where he's in Rumpelstiltskin and he's like, finally, I'll get to skin a crocodile. And I'm like, seriously, we're trying to show how far you've come. And then you have Zelina, who's like, you know, still in this, like, oh my God, I can help my sister out. And then you see them in the present and it's like, Regina's still being like, oh, well, if I didn't have the help of my sidekick here, I was like, just eye rolls all around. So much eye rolling for the Zelina storyline.
Yeah, it was like, she can sing, we need to get her number. Exactly. How can we do this? Exactly. Let's just shoehorn it in here.
Not where it was long. It was a long song.
It really was, yeah.
So that pretty much wraps up this week. I mean, for a huge, huge episode, not really a lot happened because it was really just there.
We didn't really talk about the wedding.
Oh, we could talk about the wedding.
Like, that was a thing that happened.
It felt so short and just, they're happy, I'm happy, they're happy. It made my heart hurt.
I was actually kind of really sad that Emma didn't end up wearing her mom's dress. Like, Regina couldn't have turned it back to white. Come on.
They couldn't bleach it. Like,
I thought it was a cute little moment that she couldn't find the right dress. And then her mom is like, you can wear mine. It would have, it just, you know, one more tie into the pilot. Like, it would have been cute. I was kind of disappointed when she, you know, showed up and wasn't in that one. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And I love that they tried to put Hook in a white suit, which is just hilarious.
That whole scene of them just staring at it.
Like, how would she feel if I didn't wear it?
Oh, he looked good, though.
He did. I thought the wedding was actually very well done and simple. And I'm glad that we got to hear the vows. I feel like a lot of shows, like, cut away, you know, and then it's like, oh, they're married. And this show didn't do that, and I appreciated it. Plus, gave us a lot of room for some pirate puns where Hook got to talk about his ship in relation to Emma. I'm like, I get it. You like her more than the ship. I know that's a big deal for you.
And I kind of loved, as they were dancing, like, he embraces her with one arm and then the hook, like, just kind of is hanging out. And I'm like, if he snags her dress.
Like, I am always looking at that hook whenever they are together. I'm like, where is it? Is it going, like, to hurt her?
Yeah, like, how are they handling the hook situation?
And when they dance, like, she, like, holds on to it. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
It has to be so weird. Like, it just, it cracks me up.
I love, but did you see Henry brought, like, the book to the wedding?
Yes. Yeah, which seemed kind of weird.
But I guess it, random. Like,
maybe they were
the
expecting
so that he can take it with him when the curse hits.
That was my thinking, is they knew, like, they knew the curse was coming, so maybe he was like, I'm just carrying this everywhere I go. That makes some sense, I guess. Someone is thinking through what they need when the curse hits. Who knew?
Yeah, I did enjoy the wedding. I thought it was really cute. It was on the rooftop, and, you know, you got to see a lot of the town and all of the big, felt like a very inclusive place to have everyone, where you could see the clock tower, and you can see Granny's, and you can see the sea, and then there's you know, you just have the whole group there, and you know, there's Granny and there's Geppetto and even the smaller players. Plus, she looked gorgeous. That all of the outfits were just completely on point.
Loved it.
I wish that we could do like a super cut of all of our favorite scenes, and I think it would be like all of Hook and David's scenes, especially when, like, you know, David's dealing with figuring out who killed his dad, bromance forever, and then it would be like the wedding and the proposal, and that's it.
And that, I was gonna say, and that really cute scene where Hook is talking into a seashell, and we all kind of felt it.
When Hook is talking into the seashell.
I liked that one too.
Definite top five moment of the season in Agrabah. Talking into a seashell in Agrabah.
In Agrabah, yeah.
Oh, that was so great. Oh, another fun fact for you, which I saw on Tumblr, but then confirmed with an interview video. When there's a scene in Hook's number where he's like on a chair and he steps on the back of the chair and the chair goes down, it's like built into the choreography and it's like really smooth and awesome. But Khan Donahue broke his foot doing that. And he did it like perfectly a few times. And then one time he just landed wrong and he kept filming. He filmed the entire musical number, like 8 hours worth of filming, and then went like a few days and then went to the doctor and they were like, yeah, it's broken. We have to put a boot on you. So he's been like walking around in a boot.
Oh my God.
But yeah, he broke his foot filming that musical number.
I noticed the chair and I was like, that was really smooth. Like I kind of made a mental note, but oh, poor thing.
That's dedication to your craft.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so for took sure. one for the team and all of our hearts.
Reminds me of Viggo Mortensen breaking his foot when he kicked the helmet in the Two Towers.
And screaming through it, and that being the take that made it in the movie. Yeah.
Every time I watch that movie now, I'm like, he just broke his foot.
And, yep, right there.
Aw, I didn't know that. That's a fun fact. I'll never watch that movie the same way again.
It's true, you won't. I think about it every time.
Yep.
All right. So that wraps up our discussion on the musical episode. I can't believe it has come and gone so quickly. I feel like we've been threatening to talk about it for at least 6 months. Next week is our final episode of season 6, where we'll be talking about the final battle. Very fitting. The future after that remains uncertain because we don't know what Once Upon a Time is doing. We should probably have an answer this week. This is a big week for TV renewals. I'm nervous for a bunch of shows that are on the bubble.
Yeah, Upfronts are coming soon.
Yeah.
And next week's my birthday!
And next week's Caitlin's birthday! See, there was singing on this episode.
Whoops.
All right. So we'll be back to celebrate Caitlin's birthday and the end of Once Upon a Time. I don't know which one's more exciting. It could be a toss-up. We'll see how the final battle plays out. Let us know, in the meantime, whose stories you think are going to come to an end next week. Because I'd be interested to hear what some listeners think about who they think is going to come back, should there be a season 7, and who it's time to bid farewell to. And until we return, I'm Brittany.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caitlin.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.